the Off the Ball Podcast Network. Niall Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Yeah, just when you thought it was safe. We're going to revisit the horror show of Twickenham on Sunday. Have you made sense of anything that happened yet?
Some. Lost lots of moments. We get to all that. It's definitely easier talking about. The Wales performs a couple of weeks ago.
And we love our bonus points.
Why we were so buoyant and what this team was going to do. But it's definitely two steps forward and a step and a half back. I don't think it's two back, but definitely it was a humbling result, and it was the best 12-point deficit that I think I've ever seen an Irish team being involved in, because it felt like a lot more than that.
There's been some criticism of people overreacting to this defeat, but I think that actually it is humbling, because this is the third time in a row that England have done the same thing to us, where they've just dominated us and we don't have an answer to that.
Well, they've got this blueprint now. They worked it out 13 months ago in the Aviva Stadium, where they had 3 months to plan for it after our New Zealand victory in November. It's well documented that Eddie Jones is a workaholic, and as a result, his backroom staff have to be workaholics. And they put together this blueprint where they came up with a plan, the power game, but also the kicking game in the wider channels to manipulate our defensive system, which they've gone back to twice more. And sometimes when you play professional rugby, you do a play and it works. And the immediate feeling is, gosh, we've done that once, they'll have seen it, we've got to try and find some kink to change that up a little bit. But more often than not, systems aren't in place to be able to cope with something, particularly in real time in the same game. So go back to using it a second time. And because the Irish defence hasn't changed dramatically, they put so much focus on the fullback covering that backfield that England identified, if they could get into the wide channels and put those little grubber kicks through, that with the bouncing of a rugby ball, equal opportunities on what way it's going to go. And it fell for them this time around, as it did 13 months ago as well in the Aviva. In fact, in the first minute, was it? Yeah, after the high ball. So we talked about Jonathan Joseph in advance being, out of position and whether we'd test them well. They certainly went after the proficiency of Jordan Larmour in the air. There were two high balls within the first 2 minutes, two takes for England. First one's Elliot Daly, and Larmour gets stuck in the ruck. And actually, George Cruz tried a little grubber through, which bounced off Conor Murray. Absolutely the right option. It's a foot race with Larmour getting back on his feet and Johnny May in the corner. Johnny May's a quicker player than him. If it had been a better quality kick, that could have been a score within 70 seconds. So I just thought they picked their options brilliantly on top of their crazy physicality, with and against and with the ball and in defence. We just had no answers for them, and I think they rattled us. And I was reading Gordon Darcy this morning, and he's gotten it spot on. The fanning out of their defence, the only way to counter that is to pick and jam around the ruck and make it more honest and get numbers to pile in. Their spacings were so easy for them. They had this crazy width that we could never get to the extremities, because they had 2 meter gaps between everyone. They let the ruck go, and that's where you've got to make them honest and pick and jam and look after, get after that guard, the first person beside the ruck, and make him honest and then suck everyone in as a result, and then you can go to the extremity.
So why didn't we do that?
I don't know. That was the most annoying thing, disappointing thing, is that we didn't change tack as the game went on. Even at one point, I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was in the first half, where off a phase play, something that they'd obviously planned, where it went, they got to the middle, Conor Murray played a loop play with Furlong, got the ball back, and then did a switch to Sexton, who was going to do a crossfield kick over the other side. Like, this was after 25 minutes of them hammering off the line. How did we think we were going to get three passes away and a crossfield kick? And no surprise that when Sexton got it, he got shut down from the hard press, and they had to go again for another phase. So just the adaptability to what they were seeing in front of them, and their ability to change tack, was was not evident. And I think that's a real frustration and something not to be concerned about, but something to be very mindful of. They're going to have a plan B.
I think it's very concerning, to be honest, because when what you're talking about there is what was supposed to be the hallmark of the new era, was that everybody's going to have the opportunity to play heads up rugby. And if they have the opportunity to play heads up rugby, but they're still sticking to their pre-planned moves, despite the fact the evidence is that it's not going to work, that's like, I'm not even thinking, or I've completely overthought this, where we're going to go back to the thing that we practice as opposed to playing.
But all
in front
that
of us.
Stuff only works if you can win some collisions. There were so few dominant collisions over the course of the game, carrying and particularly in defence as well, actually on both fronts. And when you don't win that, and when you don't win the advantage line, and then the knock-on effect is that defensive line is on the front foot, you're up against it. And then counter that with some pretty skewed kicking, from Johnny in particular, Conor Murray, started really well with three brilliant box kicks. And then actually a couple of his other box kicks that led to the try, to the first try, was actually a very good box kick, but then a terrible chase. So they were... kind of reinforcing error upon error, and the cumulative aspect of that just totted up to England having, it just must have felt easy for them at times.
It felt a lot like the New Zealand game where we were making these bad mistakes and then compounding the mistakes and the opposition didn't actually have to be brilliant to beat us. England weren't as good as they could be. You still feel like England could improve from that performance. What's, I guess, most concerning about what you're talking about here is that it wasn't just the physicality which beat us, it's that they outthought us and that their game plan was miles ahead of where we needed to be.
Yeah, it was. They did outthink us. They did. And it was built on that aggressiveness and that physicality. And they do know that's our Achilles heel, that when teams get to out-muscle us, we're looking for parity and then looking for the smart guys in our team or the X factor to be able to be the difference. But when we've struggled against, in the past, against New Zealand in particular and England, France in years gone by and South Africa, those four teams spring to mind immediately. When they play this crazy physical game, we struggle with being able to deal with it. And that's all about collision winning. And go back to the simplicity of the game. You get over the advantage line. The difference between defence on heels and defence on toes is stark for what happens in the next phase. And for organisation, better footwork, better accuracy at the ruck, better fight in contact, where that 60% man that we heard Joe Schmidt talking about for years, I just didn't feel that was there. And there was lots of endeavour. I thought there was a couple of still pretty impressive performances from one or two of the pack in a team going backwards. Phenomenal aggression levels from James Ryan that I hadn't seen before. Obviously, yeah. Whether he'd had a conversation with Paul O'Connell during the week about the necessity for that these were the potential Lions second rows that he was playing against in 21. Certainly Maro Itoje is, you really need to step up to them. And if you want to be considered in that league, you've got to have that about you. And we saw what Maro Itoje brought to the game, that aggressiveness and that annoying figure at ruck time, blocking kicks down, always putting pressure on Murray, holding people down. Just, he was a nuisance, and we just lacked a bit of that.
Yeah, Farrell has
a lot of people around our pack then that need to just be a bit more of a nuisance, follow James Ryan's lead.
Yeah, James Ryan played on the edge. It was a couple of times he could have been pinged. We saw some social media clips of him going off his feet at ruck time but really trying to get after guys and leave a marker. And particularly with the back rowers, when Tom Curry, you let him into a game like that, particularly early on, it felt as though he was trying to set a tone that if you come looking for our ball and you put yourself in uncompromising positions, you're going to get annihilated. And I'm all for that, but he was lucky maybe once or twice that the referee didn't pick him up on it. But no backward step taken from him. I think that was honourable, considering how much the rest of the pack, or a pack as a whole, seemed to be going backwards. And it wasn't just a pack thing. It was obviously, the collision zone at ruck, where you see more of the forwards involved, but their line speed, their willingness to miss sometimes, but know that the hustle on the inside or the jam on the outside could lap up any of those misses. added to the pressure points that they put on us. And I think we became static. Quality of pass went, our timings of run went. It just had a negative knock-on effect to all of our game plan, and we just couldn't get any fluidity or any flow in the game.
That's why I'm most concerned about this. Is that so? Say everybody fixes their footwork and their accuracy improves. Still, if England bring that power and aggression, it's a fight.
I don't know if we've an answer to it. Genuinely, I don't. I don't know. Like, if you look back to when we won the Grand Slam in Twickenham, we won all those collision zones. So we are capable of doing it.
No Tuilagi, no Billy Vinopola, no Maka Vinopola.
So there's a big aspect. I think, you know, that's why I was worried with Manu in the team. If you take him out, I think it's a different English team. And as much as Billy Vunipola has gone and Manu, you know, you look at Ellis Genge, what he did when he came on. You look at Tom Curry at 8, had an excellent game. It allowed Courtney Laws to be very good with his ball carrying and his collision winning. And then Underhill was an absolute nuisance, I thought. You know, Stander, you know, and it was probably the second of our pack that I thought, you know, tried very hard. But, you know, again, he's running into huge men. And
again,
those yards are harder and harder against that sort of size. It felt as though their back row definitely not were the winning of the game, but they really, you know, they had us up against it.
I think the point you made earlier on about these games where we try and get parity and then hope that there's an X factor, like, you can see a pathway where we play really well and we still lose the game, but at least we played really well and we've played to our game plan. But you mentioned the kick chase for their first try from Murray's box kick. Murray's box kick goes to about 3 or 4 metres to the edge of the touchline.
It's on the touchline. Johnny May, I was looking at his foot. It looked as though
he might have touched.
Now, listen, we'll take the touch to assistant referee's verdict over mine, but he was literally an inch from.
So not a bad box kick then.
So before we even get to that, like, I think the exit from that, it starts from a scrum. They have a ruck either side. For a right footer on the left-hand side to have to kick a box kick 20 metres infield over his left shoulder with pressure coming from Cruz, probably into a bit of a headwind, is a crazy exit. I tell you what we are missing. We're missing Rob Kearney's left foot on that side. It's what we used to have the whole time. I don't know why Jacob Stockdale's not stepping in there as a left footer on the left wing and relieving pressure, because that is a very, very hard kick for Conor Murray to enact. And I have to say, that first one, I thought it was an excellent kick. And he put it reasonable height, put it right on the money on where he would have wanted it. It stayed in field. Okay, if you get it out, great. But it stayed in field. Perfect opportunity, Jacob Stockdale to come in, and it's the easiest tackle. Your touchline, best defender in the world, is an inch away. You come from infield to off it, make your collision, see the ball in the air that Johnny May's nowhere to go. But instead, he kind of sprinted the first few metres, kind of looked up, thought about a contest, and then kind of gave a half-hearted jump into Johnny May, which gave him an out, which he was able to peel infield.
He ushered him infield, basically.
Yeah, and the knock-on effect to that was that they put together another couple of phases. Brilliant carry from Courtney Laws, great footwork at the line, and then this pre-planned move of, you know, going the same way. And maybe they'd done it a little bit in the first 7 minutes where they'd gone the same way, so to encourage Larmer to think that same way was going to continue. So he probably hedged his bets a little bit more on that open side. With the winger still playing very high, it's one of the repercussions that you might suffer on the basis of that defensive system of playing your wingers that high, is that the fullback has to cover so much backfield space. And Larmer probably, you know, in a perfect world, could have been another couple of yards closer to the back of where that ruck is. 15s need to be able to marshal, you know, both sides of the field. So a good line is right behind where the ruck is. But he favoured that side because he thought there might be a cross-field kick.
Yeah.
But great move back, and it was, I wouldn't quite say it was a perfect kick, because a metre before that would have been a perfect kick, guaranteeing that, you know, Johnny Sexton would have had to carry it over the line. It was touch and go. Sexton didn't get a good first touch on it, and the rest is history. So, those things, I, of course, Johnny would be annoyed, and I'm not letting him off with it completely, but those things happen. And you know, a juggle like that with someone with good handling, particularly the way the ball bounces, you can't let the ball bounce around that much. You run the risk of exactly happening what did happen.
Yeah, so it's the compound of impact mistakes, but certainly Stockdale's defence there is questionable, and it seemed like his defence for most of the game was questionable. He's definitely on a hot seat, if not out of the team after that performance.
It's something that we know about his ability going forward, and there's no question marks around that. We need to get the ball in his hands as many times as we can, particularly one-on-one, because he looks as though he can still make something happen. But in defence, I think he doesn't have the same passion for defending as he does in attack, and I think that's evident. I saw it in the Scotland game when Hamish Watson made his break towards the end of the game. He's coming across from his blind wing, and it's a reasonable left foot step, but that, you have to remember, that's, you're 7 points down, that is body on the line stuff, and he fell off that tackle, and I think you can see it in an intent. I think he plays with this huge passion going forward. I just don't think he likes it as much in defence, and just, you know, some bad selections like that half-hearted, semi-jump. I'm not sure whether I'm going to get to it. It was a bit of a nothing thing with Johnny May that led to that first try. There was another one where Aki got cleared out off a kickoff. Johnny made a clean line to him where he only reacts just as the collision is being made, where he's a couple of metres away. He's got to run there and run a blocker line and run to the point of where the contact is going to be and protect his player. Just think, he's not thinking his way through things, and whether the appetite isn't as great, you know, going backwards as it is going forwards. That's the way it appears. And I think, you know, your attack game has to be absolutely exceptional to be able to carry the negatives, and I don't think it is at the moment. I thought he was very good against Wales in attack, but very quiet against Scotland, incredibly quiet at the weekend.
You can sharpen those instincts, but can you teach them?
You can. I just he's a young player too, and, yeah. And I'm always very conscious of talking about, you know, younger players when defence is the last thing that you learn, and I think some players get it quicker than others, and you are learning on the hoof. You know, maybe he found himself involved in the Irish team a little bit earlier than he might have envisaged. He got himself in some good positions. He also gets himself in good intercept positions at other times. I don't want to only pick out the negatives. I think there are some times that he gets into the passing channel and he shuts down options, and if the pass is given, he's there for an intercept, or he discourages the player inside to throw the pass. So that they're a good piece of defence, but I think there's enough of the other ones to send an early alarm bell that, you know, it's not the same on the front foot as it is on the back foot.
I think this is, again, comes down to the whole question at the start of the tournament, where if there's a debate about form, go with the player who hasn't got the experience just yet to try and boost the number of people who you can use. Under Joe Schmidt, the first team picked itself for such a long period of time, it's hard to imagine that Schmidt would keep Stockdale after that performance, but certainly it was harder to get out of the team sometimes once you made it in. What we need is now a bunch of players who are at the same level, and Keith Earls just automatically goes back in, and Jacob Stockdale's career is not ruined forever. It's like, you'll get back in when you learn these things.
You have to be mindful of the confidence that will affect with the younger player as well. And I don't think you can just continue to pick someone because you're worried about denting their confidence for the future. Okay, so you have to hedge your bets a little bit on that and understand the individual. And I don't know Jacob Stockdale, what sort of character, whether he's mentally a very strong guy, whether I understood that his confidence took a big dent during the World Cup. Certainly defensively he looked like it, yeah, against New Zealand. So I am cautious that he's there for the long haul, so you have to try and manoeuvre and get the most out of him, you know, where he is at the moment, and just try and help him problem solve on the hoof. That said, you look at someone like Keith Earls, and I'm such a Keith Earls fan that, you know, he's come on the last couple of games. He looks very exciting going forward. I know defensively, he's a lot smarter. Yeah. Than I think Conway reads it very well too. But I think of the back three, the Keith Earls is probably our best defender, both from a reading a point of view, and that experience is telling, but also from a tackle point of view. If he gets the opportunity to really get after someone, I think he does it. And we've seen Stockdale occasionally do that, but not to the degree that Earls has done it. consistently over the course of the last 10 years. And yes, he's come in and out of the Irish team, but for me, I'd be going back and starting him.
Would Stockdale be more or less exposed defensively as a 15?
Probably less exposed. I think you've less decisions to make. It's more one-on-one stuff. So it's less, yeah, that's the issue with being a winger and playing hard up, is that at times you're going to have to read in. And at one stage, Robbie Henshaw, I don't know if you remember, Robbie Henshaw read through when George Ford ended up going for that really weird kick pass.
Yeah.
But if Ford actually just shifts it on really quickly to Elliot Daly, he's gone.
Yeah.
So, and the cardinal rule, even you can make your centre, a bad decision from your centre look good by following suit. So if he goes, you go. And he played off. And I know that he probably was, as well, Robbie didn't need to shoot that time. And he did force an error, and he forced Ford's hand, so maybe he got away with it. But on another, you know, if he's another fraction of a second, he might give that to Daly, and you've got to have Stockdale, you know, following in there and closing that space as well. I think he would be less exposed at fullback because it is your last ditch there, aren't you? It's more about covering space rather than actually tackling. So it becomes very clear if you're being called into duty, it means that they've gotten a corner and last ditch of defence.
Is there a similar conversation about Larmour acquiring the defensive skills as well? It's slightly less pronounced after the England game, but that ultimately he has that job of work to do too, to get to international level when it comes to the defensive side of his game. We know how electric he is as an attacker, and that he hasn't quite reached that point yet where he has the maturity to fully understand that there's a bit of a, they're showing me one thing here, but actually what's going to happen is something slightly different. And
yeah, I haven't seen enough of him at 15. I would say yes is the answer. Probably it's a part of his game that he would be looking to evolve. You know, he hasn't been called in a huge amount to make a lot of reads. Positionally, he looks okay, other than, you know, in defence, other than that one where he got caught out with the young scrubber kick. So, and you have to remember too, there's two aspects to defending. There's the tackling, the physical part, and there's, you know, the reading of a defensive system. And they're two very different things.
Yeah.
And you got to marry the two together. So I feel as though Stockdale is still unsure on the reading front, but as well, he doesn't get after the hit as much as he potentially could when he absolutely needs to. Or where, you know, we saw one in the Scotland game in the World Cup where he came in off the wing and he smashed someone. Like, what if you can do that once, why can't you blindside people more or be able to? And part of it is about reading that situation to be able to see it in advance of it happening to then get into the right spot to close that space down and make a big impact. But that Hamish Watson one for me, I think that's one where you know, if you miss big because you're absolutely trying to annihilate a guy, and you're not thinking about technique there. You're thinking about, I just have to stop him at all costs. Mm.
You've come in after the first two games and said, actually, I looked back at those games and they looked a little bit better. Mm. When you look back at this one, did it look better or worse than
that? No, I don't think it looked better. The first half, I know that there were two kick scores, you know, two handling errors, but it felt as though we didn't have any foothold into the game really at all. You look at those minutes 1, 2, and 3, two kicks in the first 2 minutes, and then the Manu, you know, 10-meter gain when he's hit on the advantage line, and all of a sudden they're into flow. They all have cumulative effect on momentum, and it's, you know, besides the actual physical momentum, it's the psychological momentum of getting yourselves into a game. And there were very few high points from an Irish perspective in the first half. Like, they didn't, you know, even on penalty advantage, you know, the crossfield kick from Johnny before he missed his penalty and off the tee, the crossfield kick was poor. It didn't go anywhere near where it needed to go.
Do we,
it was very hard to be positive about anything in the first half.
We seem to have a tendency to try...
Other than James Ryan's aggression, which was right on the edge.
Yeah, yeah. And could have been pinged straight off the first minute.
But you know what? I don't mind a player, you know, trying to set out a mark like that. We talk about, you know, Itoje did it for the second try.
And it works really well.
You know, James Ryan and Standard down in the ruck. And sorry, to talk about that as well, the knock-on effect that that has is Jonathan Joseph made a break because Ireland were two less defenders there.
Yeah. And he totally gets away with it.
And he was doing a job. So Cian Healy was the ball carrier. Furlong was the first clear out. Ryan and Stander were then both in it. It was only him. And then Conor Murray had that, you know, poor quality box kick. And then he held on to two of them. So that's like that sort of stuff is, yeah, of course, you're on the risk of being penalised. But, you know, that was the difference to having a disjointed kick chase.
Yeah.
And where Jonathan Joseph was able to pick off. Dev Toner was late out of that ruck as well. He was then in the backfield that Joseph beat as like almost a 15. And then that built to a corner penalty, got a second penalty, and then they got the freebie on the penalty advantage. So it all tots up. It all adds. You can't go, you know, pick in isolation, oh, you know, bad handling errors. It just felt as though it was coming. And there was other... You know, there was other times just before half time they should have scored another try. They were hammering away, and they just didn't quite get it done. But it felt at half time, you know, 17-0. There was no coming back.
It was game over.
Yeah.
This goes back to the conversation that you started before the tournament about us not having enough dog in us. We don't have enough dog in us at the moment to beat England.
I have to say, and maybe, you know, I've seen it in aspects. I saw it in Furlong, you know, in the Wales game. I thought he played really angry. I saw it in Ryan, you know, for the first time. I thought he was just a brilliant player, but see that really nasty edge, I think is a great sight, even
yeah.
And particularly in defeat.
We needed to see it from Furlong again. Like, so Furlong, if Ryan is going up against Lions rivals, Tadhg Furlong has gone up against Lions rivals, and he's the man in possession. You know, we all thought like this is how you can chuck him in there for the next couple of Lions, but that's not the case at the moment.
I think as well, even Stander, you know, he's had two man of the match performances and a pretty good performance against England. So, you know, there's definitely shades of it, but it's you just have to, you know,
it's a collective. That's missing.
It is a collective, but also sometimes you've and when I talked about the lack of dog, I think it's a comparable to Irish teams of the last 5 or 6 years and the loss of a Sean O'Brien. And I can't tell you how much of a catalyst someone like an individual like that is for everybody else to bring that aspect out in their game. And I just feel as though we're lacking one of those individuals. And maybe Ryan's that guy. Maybe he's going to step up to the plate in that front. But I hope it's not just an England performance that it's great to see a nasty edge. I love a second row, you know, throwing his weight around, and Nathan Hines being a pain in the arse, Paulie likewise, you know, Fabian Palouse. These guys, they were a pain in the backside to play against. Maro Itoje.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine?
You need that in your team. And if you're just going to be to get the job done, I think it doesn't send out a message of be afraid of us.
Itoje ripping the ball off Kilcoyne as well. So Kilcoyne, everybody wants to see him in the team, get his opportunity, and he's carrying with aggression, but it's just like... I'm taking that. Thanks very much. This is big time now. Like, that was... I thought that was one of the best second row performances I've ever seen. I can't believe he didn't get man of the match. Like, it was definitely... That is sensational stuff. Yeah. And because of the shithousery layered on top of that, it was like, okay, that's the standard now that we all need to get to.
Is it not almost more noticeable that this is just actually what we expect from Irish second rows and back rows, actually, that there is a good execution in certain areas of their game, but James Ryan is really the outlier. It actually almost is surprising to see someone in that green jersey show that little bit of dog. We almost associate it with the English. It's like all those bad guys coming up against the Irish and bending the rules and all that. That it's actually not something we expect from Irish players, and perhaps that kind of feeds down into every level of coaching and how teams are brought through in terms of their whatever their philosophy is.
I don't know about the second row thing. I think about the times that the players that I played with, Paddy Johns, you know, definitely not as skillful as a James Ryan or an Ian Henderson or a Paul O'Connell, but he was a thug. And he loved trying to maim people, and I remember playing against him in 1999 after playing the World Cup, and I saw him in a ruck, and his kind of head was popped up, and he was primed to get absolutely smashed, and I came running like from about 15 yards away and hit him square in the chest. And as I lay down on top of him, he was like, "Dricka, that was some shot." I was like, "Oh my God, I've literally given him everything that I have, and he's commending me." And so there's guys like that, and you know, Jeremy Davidson was a tough nut. You know, just as I was coming in, he was coming to the end of his international days. Paulie, Mal wasn't really that sort of guy, but he was a very talented. He was almost a bit more of an Ian Henderson type player, very talented. You know, quite skillful, very athletic. So
if only Ian Henderson had the aggression that his frame suggests he could deliver. He'd be unstoppable.
Yeah. Lots of players get angry sometimes, but it's playing angry the whole time is part of being a really good international player and a world-class international player. And where, you know, there is, to coin Paul O'Connell's phrase, you know, put the fear of God in them, there is an aspect of that, of people, of respect before you take the pitch going, this guy takes no backward step.
Yeah.
And that's why the New Zealanders rated Shawnee so much, because they knew they were getting it. And I keep going back to him, but he's now the bar of where you want your players to be. And it was because he'd take you out in training as much as he would to the opposition in a test match. So it's in you. And yes, you can bring it out to a certain degree, but it's consecutively doing it, game after game.
Have we suppressed it under Joe Schmidt, though? Like, and is there going to be a transition period where this is free? So, famously, Schmidt's penalty count was low. And we were winning games on the basis that we never gave away penalties. Never gave away penalties because we weren't launching ourselves into rucks, clearing people out from the side. We were obeying the rules and doing exactly what we were supposed to do. And it really, really worked to the point where that team delivered a lot of success.
That could be a really good point, because, you know, maybe the lads were worried about overstepping the mark with the knowledge that on a Monday session they were going to be picked up on, you know, you, two penalties today, we only had six in total, so you're on a third of our penalties, what's that about? So maybe they did suppress it a bit, but I think it's something that you have to allow evolve. And with those sort of players, you're going to give away the occasional penalty, but you know what you get on the flip to that is hugely positive in general, because it can be an inspiration. And I like playing with guys that wanted, that were up for the fight, irrespective of whether it was a hard track or a you know, pissy day. That lads, you knew you were going to get the same version of them, that they were uncompromising and were unwilling to ever take that backward step. And I think that's, you know, the skill aspect is one thing, but you know that really nasty hard edge is an important part of being a successful international over long periods and having a reputation for that.
If you look at any of the, particularly the famous YouTube video of Andy Farrell playing for Wigan in that match where they poked the head off each other, he had that. Mm. He took the field and everybody was like, if I'm going to punch Andy Farrell or if I'm going to get involved with him, I know I'm going to have to take multiple shots back.
The game has changed a bit.
I know.
Like 24 cameras, you know, you're getting away with nothing, but you can still...
Would just be Mauro Tolje.
Yeah.
Like, that level of aggression, or be James Ryan at the weekend. And so he obviously has an aggression in his defensive style and system, and also in his makeup as a player, you would hope that's going to come through as a coach. So is that one of the things we can hope that's going to change over the next while? That he'll look at that at the weekend and go, well, that's unacceptable, and we're going to have to beat England. Every year we play England, we're going to have to come up with a game plan that is ready for them the next time. At Lansdowne Road, it'll be different. But the next time we go to Twickenham in 2 years' time, we're going to have to be ready for them. So what's he thinking?
I'm just trying to think, what was it that... Did we have that when we won the Grand Slam only 2 years ago? That's not that long ago. A lot of the same players. I think there's been some new players that have come onto the scene in that time. You know, I look back to the back row that England were playing that day. Like, I know Sam Simmons was there and he'd an off game. So I think you're dealing with different sort of individuals in Underhill and Curry.
Yeah.
And so they've, you know, we've seen the birth of those as international players, and that they're here for a long time.
They're prodigies.
And then you put Courtney Laws playing really well and aggressively into that mix as well. Like, that's, you know, those three alone And Underhill doesn't look as though he's a thug. He just is hard.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm ready for the fight. Likewise, Curry, I think he's got another, just from the outside, has a little bit more of an edge than Underhill, but he just wants to scrap for everything. And definitely, you know, with Laws. And they're just three. You know, I think Cruz has that edge. He wants to, if he gets a chance to hurt you, he will.
Yeah.
Told you, no doubt. George just does his job, but Sinclair has that in him. Marler definitely has it in him. So
that was Genge.
I've seen it. You look at if you go through our pack, you know, Keane Healy can do that. Not sure about, you know, whether it's in Rob Herring's game. Furlong can, Peter O'Mahony can, Stander can, Ryan can. So there's five of eight, but it's just seeing it the whole time. And I think players, it's funny, I'm sure it probably didn't go down particularly well within the camp that I talked about there being a lack of dog. But when you talk comparatively to those that have been there before and Sean in particular, I think people will go, yeah, there's not that many Seans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's if you're comparing everybody else to him, I think you'll go, they'd have to go, fair enough, we don't really have any Seans here.
Yeah, like Ronan Kelleher is someone who's impressionable. Deegan and Doris, impressionable. Dan Levy will come back into the squad. He's got the potential for a bit of dog that perhaps actually taking this idea to the next step and looking at what England did at the weekend, is it something that you can sort of mould at that age of a player where Doris and Deegan, I don't know, do you instruct them? How do you actually inform them to get to that pitch?
I remember hearing about, I feel like I'm showing his agent here trying to promote him, you know, but I remember hearing about him playing for UCD before he ever came into the Leinster setup. God, this guy's got a proper edge to him.
Right.
And sometimes that can be good and sometimes that can mean he's a serious hothead. But then when you marry real ability on top of an attitude like that, and he wasn't the biggest guy in the world, so you're like, all of a sudden when he came in, it was like, oh, this is so exciting. And I think there's an aspect to that to Doris. I don't know him personality wise at all, but he looks abrasive,
yeah,
and he looks like he's got good skills and he carries and he's there, and you know, if there's a shot to be had, he'll try and, you know, have a go at someone's ribs. That's the sort of thing that you want. It's about trying to get after someone. And people are like, oh, you can't be encouraging people to go out and hurt people. It's the physical game. That's what we try and do. We try and,
but where's them,
you know, psychologically get the better of the opposition by the power that we exert on them. And that comes from putting in as many big shots as you possibly can.
Yeah. From Andy Farrell then, what's he thinking? Is he thinking wholesale changes for the next game to see?
When's that, France?
Well, that's what it is, yeah. So, like, we were making this conversation all week. It's like, I think Sexton's going to play because who the hell else plays?
Well, yeah, I agree. And also, he's a captain and he's had an off day. And yes, he's not been where he was in 2018, his World Player of the Year standard. He's dipped a good bit below that in a few games, this probably being, I'm sure he would agree, certainly one of his poorer games in a green shirt. But you can't go and drop a captain on the basis of a performance like that. It's a bad message. Plus, he needs Sexton. You know, I'd be really intrigued as to see what the conversation was like outside him. You know, I haven't played. Earl's good communicator. I don't know about Aki. Henshaw, you know, is a quiet enough guy where there's a lot of chat from him. Larmer, again, quite a quiet guy. So if you put Ross Byrne into that environment, do you have any conversation at all? Is it a statement of intent as to, you know, the communication being, you know, a big aspect they're looking for? I think Johnny's definitely going to play, irrespective of who the next opposition are. I think Cooney, if it was Wales or if it was Italy, I think would have started, irrespective. I always thought that he would.
Yeah. What about France, though?
I don't know. I think probably on the basis of 25-minute performance, I think he probably will start.
Does Caelan Dara start in Paris?
Yeah, I think he does.
And who goes?
I don't know.
Josh,
I think Josh again is someone that, you know, in some of the bigger, more physical games, he's not, you know, the biggest frame and the biggest stature, and he has to think his way through good lines of running and great angles. But when it gets super physical, I think sometimes we don't see the best of him. So maybe, yeah, I think you absolutely have to have Stander in the back row, whether he plays eight or six. So with Doris, and then plus one more. You know, Peter Manny was okay at the weekend, but I don't know. Do you play him at seven? I'm not sure yet. I'm really not sure. I don't think you can bring someone like Max Deegan in for a game like France and expect him to be able to mix it with the size of that back row. I don't think that's realistic.
Okay, so some changes, but not wholesale changes.
No, and listen, you'll have Henderson come back in. Maybe Earl's back in on the wing. If Gary Ringrose is fit, I don't know if he's going to be. Him back in, just for a bit more spark as well. But yeah, you have to think, when you think about wholesale changes, you've got to have the personnel
yeah.
that you think are going to make a sufficient enough difference to the team, add more value than the outgoing. And I don't know if there are that many players that are positioned to do that. I think Kelleher can go back in or yeah. can start.
Yeah.
I think just his sheer size. I think Herring, you know, good line out throwing and was busy, but I thought he looked lightweight. On a big international test arena.
Yeah, England have the ability to do that to a lot of players, it turns out. There's one last thing I wanted to talk to you about, and obviously with the game against Italy having been cancelled by Simon Harris unilaterally during the week, thoughts to return to 2001 and that season where we had this brilliant team that won 4 out of 5 games in the Six Nations. And Scotland annihilated us yeah. in the first game of the 3 games in September, and then we absolutely murder Wales and beat England very comfortably. Is that a blown Grand Slam?
We got absolutely annihilated by a decent French or by a decent Scotland team. Now, it was over in Murrayfield, and we, if you remember, what was that, 2001?
2001, yeah.
So we had a horrible 90s in Murrayfield.
They like used horrible. To just
rock us they off. Used to, yeah, yeah. They used to just beat us, beat us up physically, and you're right, ruck us off the ball. So, I suppose it wasn't that shocking that for some of that group of players that could happen there. But only retrospectively do we look and think the success we've had in Murrayfield since then, and go, why did we allow that happen? But yeah. that was sort of the norm, and we played against the Scotland team that were good that day, and we were poor. So no, it wasn't for me. That wasn't a Grand Slam that got away.
Because I always felt like if we'd had a warm up game, we would have got that bad performance out of our system. And
maybe, yeah, maybe. But
was there much preparation for that game?
I can't really remember. Was it Scotland first?
Scotland first. So this is like a week after September 11.
I remember John Leslie playing in the centre and him pretty much owning us. I remember thinking, this guy's good, and he didn't actually last for very long, but. Yeah, Patterson kicked a lot of goals. They had one of the better days, and we weren't in the game.
Yeah, because it was a decent team, and then obviously the next week we put in a brilliant performance against Wales, and then beat England as well, and having won the first two games, you're like, oh my god, like, who knows?
Yeah, but
it didn't feel that way.
Also, when you've won two, and then you play. In your first of three games and you lose it by so much, you can't go, oh,
we were so close.
So only looking back can you think,
I thought this was one of the great,
maybe there was more in that team than that. No, it didn't feel like we were at a level where we were Grand Slam potentials, far from it.
All right, because the first line in the full time report from the BBC is Ireland Grand Slam ambitions lie in tatters. So obviously the rest of the world was thinking this, hey, they've got a chance here. We were like not ready for it.
I just don't think we were thinking Grand Slams by game three. And also, that was the first year that Italy came into the Six Nations,
yeah.
isn't that right?
And they'd run Scotland close, so it wasn't a great Scotland team, was the thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Where was that? I bet you that was in Italy, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Scotland team at home, again, no different than when they play France this weekend. You know, everyone's talking about Grand Slams for France. Everything. I'll tell you what, Scotland can derail them. So, I wouldn't... Six Nations is a really strange beast that... It's hard to win away from home, as we saw at the weekend. And France scraped by in a pretty good performance against a disappointing Wales, and they only just won by 4 points.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be tough.
Yeah. All right, Brian. Good stuff. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.